Tasmania Talks with Mike O'Loughlin, weekday mornings from 9.
Always an absolute pleasure to have a chat to Ruth Forrest, independent MLC for Murchison. Ruth, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
And tell me, I mean, probably we should start with the climate change bill, considering the kind of climate we've had over the last 96 hours or so. I mean, and what's it been like on your side of the state?
Well, we did have a lot of rain around the Wynyard area where we live. I was actually down the west coast, visiting the west coast at the time the heaviest of the falls occurred. But there was very minimal flooding around that area. It was more in the catchments than flowed through the Mersey and Meander rivers and some in Circular Hill, and where some flooding around Circular Head area. And I think the issue is, as has been evidence in Victoria as well as in Tasmania, is it's not just when the rain's falling the problems there, particularly when it falls in the catchments. It's when the water flows down through the rivers after that that people can be perhaps a bit caught unawares if you're not watching the updates and the warnings that inevitably we've had to deal with. But there's a lot of people being severely impacted by these floods, with flooding in places that we haven't seen, for a very long time, certainly in many parts of the state, and also other parts of the country, particularly around Victoria.
Well, you look at also, I spoke to Jenna, Friday of Wings Wildlife Park. I mean, wonderful people, gorgeous people, and do such good work. And the amount of water that went through and the damage that happened there, and I hope they recover.
I do too, Mike. I mean, I have been to Wings Wildlife Park. I mean, it is very down in the valley near the river. So I can understand how, with a rapidly rising river, they could have easily been inundated. Yeah. I mean, they would have had an enormous task making sure the animals they look after there were safe and moved to higher ground. It's not an easy task. You're dealing with a whole range of native and other animals there. And then the damage to the infrastructure that would occur with such a body of water going through a number of the enclosures and their facilities there, like their cafe and that sort of area, which is also quite low-lying, will take some time to recover from, I imagine. So I'm grateful for the support that the government have announced to assist businesses like Wings Wildlife Park, but it will be a long and difficult road to rebuild, I imagine.
And all businesses and all people can get some assistance, as I spoke with Julie Collins before. So you've got either federal and you've got state assistance that can give you a bit of a chance to help out. But are you getting much feedback on the climate change bill and that you've been debating or discussing, if you will?
There's been people who are very interested in this space obviously getting in touch and expressing their views. I think, by and large, Mike, everyone agrees that the climate is changing and that we have a role to play in that as humans. It's not just, you know, these weather events are not just things that happen from time to time. They're obviously getting more frequent, more severe. Our flood risk, our fire risk, our major storm risk is increasing all the time. And this is as a result of the changing climate. And it is because of the rising CO2 emissions. And we do need to act. And I do commend the government for actually getting on and actually amending at the Climate Change Act. We do have a Climate Change Act, but it's being amended to strengthen it. There are some who will say it doesn't go far enough, and there were some that say that it's well and truly far enough in its current form. The thing I want to see most is very direct and targeted action rather than just a whole heap of rhetoric and talk. I think the talk's done.
I agree.
It's an issue. Yeah, and we need to get on and work with the various sectors who have more challenges than some others in decarbonising their workplaces. And just recently, Mike, I've been out around my election during the school holiday period. I've been visiting a range of different businesses and industries. I spent the last few days last week down on the west coast and visiting mines. And we know that mines can be significant emitters depending on what they're mining and their mining methods. But the mines I've met with all are looking at how they can reduce their carbon footprint, how they can reduce their emissions. Recently, there was an article in The Advocate and other newspapers from Grange Resources, who have Port Lauder and the Savage River Mine, with a target of being net zero emissions by 2030, which is a hugely ambitious target for them, and I absolutely commend Ben Maynard and his team. But I was down at Avery Mine on Friday, and fairly new owners, and they're underway and in production. It's a fairly young mine, so it doesn't have a lot of infrastructure yet, but it has a very small footprint, and that footprint will remain small because it's an underground mine. At the moment, they don't have a large workforce because they're just in the process of ramping up at the moment.
Aren't they trying to build a three-stage development accommodation to house up to 80 workers at Zen?
They are, yes, yeah. And Renison's also needing housing accommodation. I'll come back to that in a moment, Mike, because Renison and, which is the Bluestone Metals mine at Renison, that mine's tin, and Avery are both looking at putting in electric underground vehicles with electric and battery. And I know that Avery have actually got their first electric jumbo on order from Epiroc, one of our companies on the northwest coast. So they are taking this seriously. And I mean, the thing is, their investors and the market demands that they do. But we need to be sure that we can work with them and help them and encourage them to make the change that are necessary, and as we do with the agricultural sector, which is a little bit more difficult with livestock in controlling methane emissions. But the work that's been done with the Asparagopsis, which is a seaweed that's shown a huge amount of promise in reducing the methane emissions from ruminant animals like cows who chew their cud, is quite significant. So that's another Tasmanian innovation, if you like, of the development of this seaweed.
A burp tax.
Yeah, the thing is, I think we don't need to be imposing tax on people. We need to be helping them to change the way they do things to ensure that their emissions reduce. And that's what we need to be focusing on more than anything, being punitive and talking about it. Let's get on and do it.
But we need the tin, we need the nickel, we need the silver, we need these minerals desperately because we're not talking about all that nasty, horrible coal, even though I think they're going to be shutting coal way too soon in regard to the power bills, and that's another story. But the minerals we have in Tasmania are necessary. How did you go when you did visit MMG and talk to them about their tailings dam? I mean, that's been quite controversial. I mean, MMG is such an important business. It's an important business for the entire region.
It is an important business. The day I was set to meet with the general manager of the mine, he actually couldn't leave home because he lived in a flood zone up on the northwest coast. So we had to actually put that meeting off until another day. So I didn't get a chance to speak to him directly. But I know that there are other options being looked at with a tailings dam. They absolutely need more tailings storage, and that's important to ensure the mine can continue and to as you said, Mike, mine the minerals that are critical for the decarbonisation and of the future and the electrification of our future. Minerals that are mined in these West Coast mines are the metals and minerals that you need for batteries, for electric vehicles, for the charging stations, for your mobile phone, and all of these things that we rely on. And so we need to be sure that these minerals are mined in a way that is environmentally less harmful with fewer emissions as possible. And that's why I do commend these companies for actually taking that on and actually actively working to do it without being demanded by the government to do it, because there are other forces that require them to.
I find it fascinating that people are trying to, you know, go against them. We're not saying any new mines at all. These are existing mines. We need them to keep going, and we need to look after them for the population, for the entire West Coast and more, but for Tasmania. Anyway, that's me.
Some of the old mining operations do have legacy issues on the West Coast, Mike. There's some of the older mines that are no longer operating, and where new companies take over those leases, part of that requirement when they do that is to clean up that mining legacy of the past, which is not actually their legacy, it's the legacy of the past. And we've seen that with a number of our mining companies that have gone into these areas that have had leases over them, have been mined in the past, and part of that deal is that they clean up the legacy of the past, which we know has been pretty unpleasant in some parts.
Can I talk about, move on to, before we run out of time, local government elections at 2pm 25th, where you say haven't got much time. How are they travelling? I mean, most people, it seems we're about halfway, about 40-odd, 45, maybe nearly 50% in each region is sending them in, but even though it's compulsory.
Yeah, I think there may need to be a bit more of a publicity push on the off radio and on television adverts, and to remind people to actually get their vote in, that it is compulsory to vote. And I think the benefit of having a postal vote and being able to take your time over it is in some of the areas where there are a lot of candidates, and Central Coast is one of those, as well as Hobart, for example, but some of them got a large number of candidates, and you do get the candidate information booklet there, which has a short statement from each of the candidates. Some of them don't get their statement in, but from the majority of the candidates, they put a statement about themselves, what they stand for, which is helpful to sort of go through the booklet and say, yes, I agree with that one, or no, not that one doesn't sit with my views of the world. Not that you can make a definitive statement about that. It's only, I think, 150 words. But I think it's important that you do take the time to have a read. So people may be taking their time. There's been a lot of candidate forums going on around the state, which has been really great. I've been to a few of those, and a lot of those, if you couldn't get there, are available online. I do encourage people to have a look at those if they're not sure. But where you've got a large number of candidates, it is a pretty daunting task, and you only get one ballot paper, and if you muck it up, you definitely have to seek another one. But it's an important process, and I think some people probably, like a lot of things, we leave things to the last minute. We book to go to events late and that sort of thing as well. But I do encourage people to have a look at it, just sit down, get a cup of tea, have a sit down, read through, and then vote. And don't forget to vote for your mayor and deputy mayor candidates as well. It's voting for them as a candidate or a mayor is two separate votes. You've got to, if you want them on council and you want them as mayor or deputy mayor, you need to put a mark against each of them in each area, because if you think you've voted for them as a candidate, you don't need to worry about as mayor, or the other way around, you may not get the person that you want representing you.
Yeah, good point. Now, tell me more about your visit to the West Coast, Ruth. Speaking with Ruth Forrest, independent MLC for Murchison. Ruth, how was it? I mean, I know that I was talking with actually Shane Pitt, Mayor, later on, but the interesting part about it is always has been housing problems, and, there's not been enough to try and get new workers down there. There's just not been the housing available for them.
Well, this is the thing, Mike. It actually creates housing pressures further up the northwest coast. Because a lot of the workers, if they can't get accommodation on the West Coast, and that is a major and significant problem, just not for the mining sector, it's also for our health sector, our other businesses, our hospitality and tourism businesses. And when that occurs, then the people will drive in and drive out, which it's a not unreasonable thing to expect. It's depending on which mine you're at. It's only perhaps a couple of hours in and out. But that'll then push housing pressure up onto the northwest coast as people move to the northwest coast to work in these mines. And so it is great to see the employment increasing in the area, but we do need to make it easy for people to actually move to the west coast and live there and with their families. And some people are, but there is an absolute dire shortage of housing. And I've been speaking to the general manager at the West Coast Council, who we've talked about this a number of times. And I think what we need to look at is, I know that government has a housing strategy at the moment, but I think what we actually need is a more targeted, specific strategy for remote and itinerant workplaces, if you like, where people come and go, but the mines continue or these other industries continue, such that you can look at different models. I'm not talking about just building dongas, for example. I'm talking about building properties that can be multi-purpose, that can be maybe converted to aged care or converted to other social housing when the mine inevitably closes hopefully many years hence. But we need to look at what sort of living would people like, and maybe it is more medium to higher density housing in these remote communities, because people don't want to necessarily look after a garden or a big yard. They're there to work, and they do work long hours at times. So let's have a more focused strategy for the West Coast. And I think I'm hopeful, and I have had an early and preliminary discussion with the Minister for Housing, Guy Barnett, about the new Homes Tasmania statutory authority that will be established.
Mm, good.
That this will be, in my view, a very important role for them to look at these issues and to look at a community-specific need. Not, you know, not saying, well, we've got a, you know, people living in tents in the showground in Hobart, which indeed there have been, and that's not okay. But the issues to house those people and get them into safe and secure housing are different to the issues on the West Coast, and we need to recognise that difference and think differently about it.
Oh, indeed. I mean, Dan, that's the pleasure I had of living in the West Coast. I love the place.
It's beautiful.
It is. Tell me, Mental Health Week, we've recently gone through quite a number of events, and they had some in Queenstown you went to.
Yeah, I went to an event called Frocktails down in Queenstown, and this was a wonderful fashion parade of some of the historic garments that women have worn over the years on the West Coast. Some of them come from the collections of some of the more elderly Queenstown residents, particularly at times when they used to, when the West Coast was very much more highly populated than it is now, and they used to have balls regularly. And many of these dresses, or frocks as they are generally called, were the most beautiful garments that were sourced specifically for balls on the West Coast. And it was very competitive to get Belle of the Ball and that sort of thing. So there was a whole range of fashions from over the years that had come directly from the wardrobes, if you like, or from the Pioneer Museum in Zion, that there is now a large display of historic garments there. And they were modelled beautifully by a number of local women.
Oh, well done.
And at the end, they got to choose their favourite outfit and wear that as the final walk around the catwalk, if you like. And it was just a really great, there was no charge for people to go. It was funded through a variety of funding sources, including the state government and council. And it had a really good turnout, and everyone loved it. And some of the people who owned the garments, including one of the older ladies who used to attend many of the balls, was also there. So it was a lovely event, and really did bring a smile to everyone's face, which is what you want to do in Mental Health Week.
Absolutely. And tell me about the tulips tiptoeing.
Oh, yeah, well, we did have a bit of rain before and after the Tulip Festival, Mike, and thankfully,
a little bit.
On the day of the Tulip Fest, it was a beautiful day. It did get a bit windy and a few showers later in the afternoon, but I just must commend the Waratah Wynyard Council and the crew and the huge number of volunteers that worked terribly hard to put that on. It was a massive event that was spread out right through Guttridge Gardens, right down to the wharf area, with a whole range of food and drink options and stalls and a small sideshow alley, if you like, for the children. There were helicopter rides that you could pay for and go for a ride up around the tulip farm, so see it from the air and along the coast. There was just thousands of people there, Mike. I was talking to some of the people that were driving in from the Burnie direction, and they said it took quite a long time to get into Wynyard, and there was parking was an absolute premium. You had to park quite a distance away. Thankfully, I can walk from my home to the gardens, so we just walked. But it was a really fantastic day, and I just commend them. I think everyone was really excited to be there. Great music, plenty of local music being played, and just a great venue and a really great day. So well done. And it was also the last official function, I think, that Mayor Robbie Walsh will be officiating at. Was the opening of the festival. He's retiring after many years of service, so it was a nice little send-off for him in that regard.
And it's also the start of Seniors Week.
Yes, yeah, and I mean, I think Seniors Week has another huge range of activities going on, and I encourage all those out there that have with a bit of time and who are more senior in our community to get involved in these. It is a thing that happens every year with a range of opportunities for people to engage, to get out and about, and actually socialise a bit after what's been a pretty torrid time for many people over the last couple of years.
Absolutely.
But it's great that there's so many things happening at the moment, and people, I think, are really keen to get out and about and amongst things.
They are indeed. Ruth, always a pleasure. You're always out and about yourself, visiting and seeing people, which is good. What's the general, I mean, besides obviously what we've just been through, is it still cost of living that most people raise? How tough it is?
I think it is. Housing is one of the key issues. Because if even those people, the people who do have their own homes, are very aware of the many who don't. So part of the cost of living feeds into that, obviously, because as costs go up, rents go up, then people find themselves facing or actually homeless. And they're the really key challenges. So it is linked. Those two things, obviously. I mean, access to services is always a bit of an issue in our more remote locations, but I think more than anything, it is the rising cost of living and the very real crisis that housing and housing affordability is.
Look, it's just, I really feel for some people just how tough it is out there, and then you know, doesn't seem to be a lot of relief. There's a lot of argy-bargy, a lot of political speak, and even, I mean, it's nice to hear that, oh yeah, this is coming, that's coming, but by the time they get through the red tape, it'll be time to vote another government in. I mean, it's kind of like that. But Ruth, listen, you're a breath of fresh air, great to talk to you, and I look forward to our next chat in a fortnight.
Great. Look forward to it, Mike. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ruth. Ruth Forrest, independent MLC for Murchison with Tasmania Talks.
Tasmania Talks with Mike O'Loughlin, weekday mornings from 9.